Good afternoon, everyone. The week is halfway over. It's going quickly, isn't it? Today's topic is one of my favorite because I think that the health message, as we think about it and practice it, is often rather negligent of the areas that we are discussing today. We do an awful lot about nutrition, and that is important. But today we're going to focus up on two different aspects of building a better brain, better habits, and a better life that have been too neglected. One of them is exercise, and especially the mental health connection with exercise. And then the second area is actually attitude and disease. And it is a phenomenal relationship, actually stronger than diet. And yet it receives so little emphasis. So today, as we begin, I want to just start with one of my favorite Bible stories. And we're just going to touch on it briefly because we have a lot to cover. And I've had several people tell me how fast I talk. And it doesn't seem like I do, but I'm going to try to slow down. But it's probably still going to be pretty nonstop. John chapter 5 is one of my favorite stories in the history of the life of Jesus. And it's the story of the man at the pool of Bethesda. How many years did that man lay by that pool waiting for his miracle? 38 years. 38 years, here was a man paralyzed from the neck down with no one to help him, waiting for the angels to stimulate the water, to stir the water so that he could have healing. Well, as the story goes, Jesus came by, and the way the story opens is so beautiful because it says he saw him and he saw that he had been there a long time. Now, that is very encouraging to us, isn't it? Because many of us have been in habits or lack of habits thereof, mental health habits, whatever the rut that we've been in, we may have been in it for a long, long time, a particular mindset, a particular pattern of eating or living or relating to people, social skills, whatever it is, we may be just so entrenched. And Jesus sees how long we've been there. But the first question that he asked this man is a very encouraging one. He says, would you like to be made whole? Seems like sort of a redundant question, doesn't it? And yet when you work with people, you see that having the desire to change really is the most important question. It really is. You can have so many tools and resources available for people, but if they don't want to make progress or change in their life, there's nothing that you can do. You can't bribe or cajole or coax or any of those things. The person has to make a choice. And so that really was an appropriate question. Well, Jesus asked this man if he wants to be made whole. And the first response of this man is very typical. He begins to explain all of the obstacles impeding his way. So instead of having fellowship with the Lord, at the Lord's invitation, he's having fellowship with his troubles. How many times do we do that? And, you know, we really do have a choice. We can either focus on problems or focus on solutions. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking a lot about today. And by the way, we have two new handouts. And the two handouts that we have available today are two of my favorites. One of them is 7 Goals for Achieving a Designer Lifestyle. And the other is 7 Ways to Maintain Those Goals. Because we can get to a goal and then lose it like a meteor. It's just there and it's gone. And so what are some strategies for maintaining those goals? So don't forget the handouts here. But this man begins to tell the Lord all the reasons why his miracle can't happen. And we can do that too. You know, my parents were overweight, the dog, the cat, the turtle, you know, the canary for generations. I've been this way all my life. I've dieted all my life, or whatever the challenge may be. I just don't see any way out. I've always been this way. I always will be this way. My children are this way. My genetics are that way. How can I change? This is a very common mindset for all of us when we see these very strong, entrenched traits. Well, this does not stop the Lord at all. And in fact, he tells him to take up his bed and walk. And the man does this. He follows the instruction of Jesus, and he is healed. Later on, the Lord finds him at the temple, and he does something that we would consider a little bit socially unacceptable. I think if we had a healing, we would have a big potluck and have CNN or Fox come in and do some interviews. We'd write up a press release and get that published, and it'd be all over the place. We certainly wouldn't do what Jesus did. Jesus found this man, and he said, "Behold, you are made whole. Go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you." Now this man, obviously from the context of the story, had made a series of choices in his life that brought him into this paralyzed condition. So in addition to having physical disability, he had the remorse and the guilt of knowing that he had brought this condition upon himself. What a terrible predicament to be in. It's a predicament that we've all found ourselves in at various times, where we have suffered in the backwash of our own choices, whether it's the way we've treated someone, whether it's a parenting style, whether it's habits that we've passed on, whatever it may be, we have to suffer in the backwash knowing that our choices brought us there. And yet the Lord heals this man, and he says, "Go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you." And I remember Dane and I were traveling to a business appointment, and he was driving, and I was reading our evening devotion. This was the story that I was reading. And I looked at my husband, and I said, "Dane, what could be worse than being paralyzed from the neck down with no one to help you? What's worse than that?" And Dane didn't even miss a beat. He said, "Being paralyzed from the neck up and not wanting help. That's worse. Nothing worse than that." And so today, we're really talking a lot about the neck up. It's really all about attitude. It's not about aptitude. Attitude is more important than facts. For the first section of our program today, we're going to be talking a little bit about exercise brain effects. And it is a very thrilling topic. As a matter of fact, just in anticipation of this topic, I don't know, Mrs. Lohman, Elder Lohman's wife, I don't suppose she's here today. Do you know who I'm talking about? Dorita, is that her name? Danette. She's amazing. She's a grandmother, and she does 9-mile marathons. 9-mile, I think it's 9 miles. 9-mile marathon, I don't know how many Ks that is. 15K, something like that. And I asked her, I said, "How on earth do you get started doing something like that?" And she said, "Well, the way you get started is just very slow. You just maybe run a minute. And when I run, I'm just sort of at a canter, a lope. I don't want to hurt my knees." So she said, "You run a minute, walk a minute, run a minute, walk a minute, and then you pick it up a step. You know, run 2 minutes, walk 1 minute. She said, "Give it a try." So while I've been here at camp meeting, I've been doing that. And the first day, I love to walk, I love to exercise, I go to the gym and all that kind of stuff. Although my son accuses me of just warming the exercise equipment for other people. He's kind of rude, don't you think? You'll see him on the video today. But I started doing that. I thought, I wonder how that would feel, because I know that the aerobic effect of exercise is phenomenal in the brain, absolutely phenomenal. So I've been doing that, and today I ran a 0.5 mile without stopping. I couldn't believe it. Well, I think it's a half. I'm guesstimating. It might be a little less, maybe an eighth of a, maybe a quarter of a mile. Well, and I think it's a 0.5 mile. I'm going to drive it and see. But I was amazed in just 3 or 4 days. And you just feel terrific when you're done. My son has criticized me for my exercise regimen. He says, "Mother, anybody that can wear their exercise outfit 3 times in a row is not exercising." So he's just a show-off. Let me tell you just a little bit about exercise. By the way, yesterday, what was the topic? You remember what we talked about yesterday? We talked about fiber. This was a 26-day program, just 26 days. This is the New England Journal of Medicine study of 3,200 people. A 26-day program of just high fiber in the diet. And we want how many grams approximately every day? 50. How many of you were thinking more about fiber today when you made your choices at mealtime? 2. We may have to repeat that class. This was a combination of a high fiber diet and 1 to 2 hours daily walking. Just 1 hour, just cut it even to 1 hour. 39% of these type 2 diabetics were able to stop their insulin therapy. They were already slipping into insulin dependence, and they were able to stop their insulin therapy. 3/4 of them stopped their oral hypoglycemic medication. 5% loss in body weight. And by the way, for every 5 pounds that you lose, if you're overweight, you're losing 15 pounds pressure off your knees. So that's an amazing benefit. Absolutely phenomenal. 5% loss in body weight, 7% drop in blood pressure, systolic, 15% drop in fasting blood glucose, which means that if blood sugar's going down, what else is going down? What chases sugar? Insulin. So the insulin is going down. 22% drop in total cholesterol and a 33% drop in triglycerides. This is absolutely incredible. By the way, whatever weight a person is, being sedentary, just being sedentary, doubles your risk for diabetes. Doubles it. Going from a 28-inch waist to a 38-inch waist triples your risk of diabetes. It triples it. And just being overweight triples the risk. Excuse me. The 10-inch waist gain is a six-fold increase. A six-fold increase in diabetes risk. So little choices can really make a very, very big difference. I want to share with you a study that was done. It's an absolutely amazing study. There's a neuropsychiatrist from Harvard University. His name is Dr. John Rady. He's just written a book on exercise in the brain, and it's called Spark. We will be interviewing Dr. Rady. We'll be doing a series of programs with him in July, which I'm really looking forward to. And he is one of the nation's leading experts on brain health, addiction, neuroplasticity, that type of thing. He's an excellent author as well. He's not a Christian. But he did a study of a group of kids at Naperville, Illinois High School. Now, the obesity rate at Naperville High was very typical. About 33% of the kids in any given class were either overweight or obese. They were on a typical sports program where most of the kids are standing around on the field while a few are being active, but most of the gym period is standing around. And the kids that would need the most exercise were the least active because they are the less, perhaps, adept at some of these physical things. Well, during this year, these children took a test, and the name of the test is in his book, but I don't recall the name, but it's a worldwide test where their test scores are compared with kids the same age from other parts of the world, from all over the world. And in math and science, they came in 86th in the world, which is a really poor score. That's a very, very poor score in math and science. So their rating, they were ranked according to nation. So they were 86 down the list. 85 nations had superior test scores in math and science. Well, they brought in a fitness coach who now tailored individual fitness goals for these kids because they had a terrible sports program. It wasn't working. So the fitness, rather than the sports emphasis, now began to emphasize aerobic activity, getting the heart rate up, getting so much of this type of response every day. So they brought in treadmills and the elliptical bicycles, and they had a track, and every individual young person had a goal to reach with their aerobic health. The cardiovascular fitness was the new emphasis, not sports skill, but cardiovascular fitness. Well, the obesity rate went down from 33% to 3% in this classroom. They noticed that the kids in English class from this particular class, their verbal fluency increased 20% almost immediately, within 2 weeks. But the most startling surprise came the next year when this particular class retook that test of math and science. They came in number 1 in the world in science and number 6 in math. Now, Dr. Rady, in his book, explains what happens when there is an aerobic effect in the brain, and he talks about the different parts of the brain that are affected. There are two very special parts of the brain that are affected when you exercise. One is the cerebellum, which not only has to do, it's back here, not only has to do with balance and stability and dementia risk, gait, how many steps you take in a given span is linked with dementia risk, because gait begins to change when the brain begins to deteriorate. And so the cerebellar portion of the brain that has to do with spatial skills, word fluency, it just was throttled up. And then the frontal cortex that has to do with executive control, fluid intelligence, assimilating information, memory, problem solving, all of the capacity to learn and pay attention, all of these things were improved, including creativity, feelings of well-being, anxiety and depression were reduced, cortisol levels were reduced, which is associated with poor learning, so the stress hormones were down, so the capacity to persevere was increased just through physical exercise. This is absolutely phenomenal, and Dr. Rady explains how this happens. Remember yesterday we talked about how when your muscles contract, your muscles become more sensitive to insulin. There are these proteins within the cells called glucose transporters that don't have anything to do with insulin. They just have to do with opening gateways to receive glucose. So even in a type 1 diabetic that needs to take insulin, their need for insulin can be reduced by 50% just with exercise, because glucose transporters float to the surface of the skeletal muscle cells and begin to glom on to that glucose irrespective of levels of insulin. And this effect can increase anywhere from 2 to 20-fold, and it can last for up to 2 days. In addition, there are receptors, insulin receptors, that are gateways to take in that glucose, and those are also increased through exercise. But there's something even more interesting that happens in terms of brain health when we contract our muscles and exercise and lift weights and get an aerobic response. There are growth factors. There's a blood-brain barrier that is like a gate that keeps large molecules from entering the brain and causing damage. Well, and I don't mean to be walking down the aisle here and missing the people that are up here. What happens is that gate becomes more permeable, and there are growth factors that now enter the brain. They have access to the brain. You have insulin growth factors that have access to the brain. You have vascular growth factors that now have access to the brain. And when those growth factors get into the brain, they trigger the production of a protein called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And the way he describes it is, he says, it's like throwing Miracle-Gro in your brain. It increases the density, it increases vascularity, it increases the synapses, it increases cognitive ability, it increases the weight of the brain. And so in the ability, and this is throughout the 70s, 80s, this is a very real phenomenon. And so for us to be sedentary and not to take advantage of this brain-priming, mood-elevating, stress-lowering, hormone-balancing regimen is a crime. It's a crime. Let me just share a couple of statements with you. It says here, and remember, we've been doing science and inspiration, science and inspiration, science and inspiration, because they are in perfect harmony. Listen to this. If our physical habits are not right, our mental and moral powers cannot be strong, for great sympathy exists between the physical and the moral. So now that we have sort of a biochemical background, we can understand how this is the case. Now, this is inspiration. It's incredible. I should have made you guess, but you'd pick it up. In order for the brain... This is an amazing statement. In order for the brain to have clearness and strength of thought, what do we call that? In science, we call it plasticity, the ability to learn. In order for the brain to have clearness and strength of thought, retentive memory, and mental power, the ability to persevere, the ability to learn, the ability to solve problems, the muscles of the body, this incredible? The muscles of the body should have exercised a portion of each day in order to preserve and improve health. This is incredible. This is what Dr. Rady is describing in his book. From Science, after a bout of aerobic exercise, you are more sensitive to changes in the world around you, better able to make good decisions, and when you need to act, you're quicker off the mark. That's fluid intelligence. And it's amazing. As a matter of fact, the same author said that molecular modifications occur in the brain. That means genetic changes occur in your brain. So when I went for my little run this morning, I can look forward to being able to have better success as I articulate concepts over time. And you may be praying for that increased ability on my behalf, and I appreciate it. But I will also implement exercise as part of the plan. Science. Oh, this is the one I love. I love this statement. Physical activity initiates modifications in molecular mechanisms that enhance the plasticity of the brain. In other words, the genetics of the brain are changing. They're just changing and making you sharper and smarter. Don't you love that? It increases cerebral blood flow, increases neurotransmitter availability and efficiency, affects brain structure, increases executive control, planning, coordinating, filtering out distracting information, enhancement of learning and memory, learning better, better mental processing. I like that. Inspiration. Physical exercise is a precious blessing for both mental and physical ailments. Now, remember that. Mental and physical ailments. Exercise with cheerfulness would in many cases prove a most effective restorer to the complaining invalid. Exercise with, and it's really interesting because rats that are in a bad mood, when they are forced to go on a treadmill against their will, they do not increase in their brain density. So we do have to have a relatively nice attitude about our exercise program. Anyway, and it also says that she says that exercise increases the will. It increases the ability to make a decision. And that is a dopamine. That's a dopamine thing, because dopamine is involved in what to do next. And so the very will is increased and enhanced as we move our bodies. I think this is absolutely incredible. It reduces tension, depression, anger, and confusion, increases energy for 1 hour, reduces anxiety, increases the ability to handle stress, lower levels of shyness, loneliness, hopelessness, increased well-being, creativity, self-esteem, and alleviates even major depression. In all of our books, but especially Simple Solutions and Living Free, we do have segments on exercise, the mental health benefits, and that is very, very important. Well, I have taken too long on the introduction, but I thought it was very important. And so let's now take a few minutes to look at a DVD clip on exercise. And you will also see a very stunning testimony. Now, the DVD clip that you are about to see is part of the Living Free program series that is available to you as you do your program for your neighbors and friends or in your community.
Now, you may be looking at this lens right now and saying, yeah, he really exercises, but I can tell you, I take an hour every day. I start out first thing in the morning after I have a word of prayer, and then I walk at least an hour, and which entails 3-4, sometimes maybe more miles a day. And I have found that that makes such a drastic difference. Let me share with you some of the things that's done for me. As I have lost weight, as I have really been involved in exercise, you know, when you aren't very involved, you have a tendency to ask a lot of people to do things. You might ask your wife, oh, hand me that glass of water there, or do this for you. And you don't even realize that you're in a pattern of having everybody do things for you. And as you begin doing more exercise, as you walk those 3 or 4 miles every day, you find now you're not dependent upon other people to do things for you. Another thing that it does for me is it changes my whole psychological outlook. When you are a person who's very sedentary, You can just get so crabby, or you can get so offbeat for such simple little things. But when you have some sort of exercise, it changes the physiological compound of your brain. But only by physical exercise does that help things, for example, like your memory. It helps you with the capability of reason. It helps you with so many things that we need in a world that we live in each and every day. Not only that, but it helps you make proper decisions. When I exercise, I have more of an ability to choose the things I want to do. This whole thing of exercise is about choice. There's mornings I get up, I don't want to go outside when it's 20 below zero, so I don't. I get in my car and I drive to the nearest mall, and then I walk around like the little Pavlovian mouse or dog around the mall. Diet exercise is more than a habit. It's more than I'll do this today. It's more than a New Year's resolution. It's a change of lifestyle. It's walking up those stairs instead of taking the elevator. It's walking from the farthest part of the parking lot instead of getting as close as I can to going into the grocery store. So as I've gone to my cardiologist, my cholesterol has gone from 250 to 160 as a result of exercise. I've lost 130, who knows how much weight, I'm not even keeping count anymore, as a result of exercise. My blood pressure has gone from 140 to 95 down to 105 over 65. These are real changes as a result of diet and specifically exercise. Today, get up off the couch. Go for a walk. Take your dog for a walk. Go up the stairs. If you're not involved in diet and exercise, you're not going to be in good health. You may be as skinny as a stick. You may look good outside, but inside, there's a walking time bomb. I know. I've been there.
My reason for exercise is because my life is very stressful at times, busy, intense, with too many deadlines, and if I don't exercise, my body can't handle that stress. But the exercise is a great relief and gives me an opportunity to build up my strength, change my pace, and keep me fit and feeling good. Without it, I am so encumbered in life, and I just can't keep at the pace that the life demands. But exercise provides the resolution to all of that stress and is a great relief. When I exercise, I find that work is a lot easier to accomplish. I can get more done at the same time and the same amount of time than if I did not spend the time in exercise. I find in my life that I have to concentrate on the key elements of exercise and eating right and getting enough water. And I know that everybody faces that challenge, but if I don't make it a priority and fit it into my schedule, I have a great difficulty staying fit. And one of the things that's a great benefit to me is having somebody who's after me to make sure that I get on the calendar is a great help in making sure that I fit exercise into my busy schedule.
Well, I'm a college student, and I find that exercise to me is like the oil, the grease that keeps the machine running. I have a very sedentary job as well, and just like I need food to fuel me, I also need to exercise. And I find that even when I have like tests and am just crunching with papers or whatever, I have to take that hour, hour and a half, whatever it might be, to get my exercise, and I find that it clears my head so that I can do better. Not only that, but it helps me feel good. It helps me improve my well-being and the way that my body operates. So if I keep my body operating properly with exercise and the right fluids and the right foods, then I do better on exams. I do better at work, dealing with my patients. And just find that I'm able to function better during the day and my mood is better also. I remember one time I went like a week or two without getting exercise and I had exams and I actually didn't get as much done studying even though I had the extra hour and a half or 2 hours to study because my brain was just so fogged over. If you find that you're a student and you're extremely busy and you don't feel that you can fit that into your schedule, just like you factor in work hours and your study time and social time, budget in workout time. It is crucial. I even take some of my social time out, even if it's just a half an hour, an hour, and I put in exercise time because it helps me do so much better on exams and just overall studying.
I'm just here in the YMCA and doing my exercising. And before I go to lift up room, I usually like to do some climbing wall for, this helped me to warm me up. And since I was in war, I was soldier, I lost my leg and trying to rescue my friend from the landmines. And I always was pretty much active since I was 15. I like to exercise and to spend my time doing something useful that can strengthen my body and mind and spirit. And after I lost my leg, I got discouraged. But then sport, especially I like to do the gym and lifting up the weights. And this helped me to stay in shape because for me it was very crucial to maintain body weight, that I don't become so much overweight, because this can affect my walk and also my mood. And I find, since I was exercising, that this was very good for me, for my nerves, because I would feel relaxed and tired. I could sleep better during the night. I had many friends who told me, I cannot do this. And I think we can do all things with God's help. Just we have to put ourselves to it and look for our own benefit. And also the way I eat also affects my health and also the ability to perform in gym, and also whether I'm lifting up the weight or swimming or kayaking. I just like to eat healthy food and wholesome food because this gives me good energy and also satisfy my hunger. I really think that here for disabled people, I think for everybody, that is very important to regularly exercise, walking, running, a little bit of lifting up the weights, and especially for disabled people because we don't have legs. And it's very easy for us to get obese or overweight. And I'm already around 11 years without legs. And I think that because of exercising, I feel much better. And I would also like to mention that the first years after I lost my leg, I was very disappointed. I used to exercise a lot. And then I was kind of feeling like ashamed to go out and to expose myself to community and to the people, and I had some bad experience because when I would go outside on the streets, there would be people pointing at me and saying, oh, look at what happened to him, especially little children. They will kind of ask their mothers and parents, what happened to this man? And I would feel like distressed. But the later, once I start to exercise and I will start to come into contact with the people, I would forget about what people say. I just thinking of myself that I can do it. And if I say that I can do it, I believe that I am able to do it. With God's help, I can do all things. And just it's important to come into the touch with the people. If we are exclusive, if we are trying to exclude ourselves from outside, we will also feel like rejected. And I think just don't be afraid, just be courageous. And go and do it.
I think I exercise mainly because I've discovered how important it is for my physical well-being. I've discovered with polio that your muscles get very tight and they don't want to work. And with exercising, it makes them more flexible, which makes me more mobile, which makes me to be able to get up and go. There's nights when I come home from work where I don't want to exercise, and fortunately, I have a husband that helps motivate me, that encourages me, that reminds me of the benefits. There was a time, a couple months ago, that I became sick, sick to the point where I couldn't exercise, and I think it was like a 5-week period where I didn't, and in 5 weeks my body just, it changed dramatically. I started feeling the aching all over again, and you would think with polio and arthritis that the exercise would increase the pain, but it's done quite the opposite, actually. It has decreased my pain. It's decreased my stiffness. It's enabled me to have more energy. Even though some nights I don't want to be here, I'm glad when I do. I'm glad when I'm finished. But I feel like I've accomplished something. I think it's more important for me maybe than the average person, because they can get up and run out to their car and carry on. When you have a disability, even something as what would seem so minute as working out 45 minutes to an hour, you feel like you've accomplished so much more. And it helps your self-esteem. And the very first machine I started on was the rowing machine. I thought, oh, I can sit on that. I'll be able to row 15, 20 minutes with no problem. Well, the truth of the matter is I sit down on that rowing machine, and within 30 seconds, I thought I was going to die. And Eric was on the other one with me, well, next to me, and he kept encouraging me. I got to 50 seconds, and I had to stop. And now, a lot of times, I start racing against Eric because he's always on the other one beside of me, trying to keep pace with him. And we go 20 minutes, 22 minutes. Sometimes we go minutes. Sometimes I go until I burn X amount of calories. And it's just, it amazes me when I look down and I see the 20 minutes on my little counter, when I know the first night I was here, I went 50 seconds and I was in tears. The leg extensions, when I started on that, I couldn't lift one plate, which was equal to 10 pounds. I literally did cry. I was humiliated. I was ashamed. And now I lift two plates, which is 20 pounds, and I sweat a lot, and I grit my teeth a lot, but I can do it. When I hear people go, I can't do it, I'm too overweight, I'm too old, you know, I'm sick, I hurt. Yeah, well, I'm too old, I'm too overweight, I'm missing a leg, I have polio. But I know the benefits, even if you start out just 1 minute and you do nothing more than to do this at the start. And then the next day, you know, take it out the other way. You know, add a leg movement to it. There's just so much that you can do. And you don't have to sit back and be defeated. You can be the one who defeats. And just do it. Stop making excuses and just do it. It always amazes me when I get off a machine and I walk out and I just think, I did it.
All right. Any excuses, anybody? That's amazing, isn't it? Those testimonies. Since Sharon has begun her lifestyle program, her exercise program, she has gotten off 5 blood pressure and cholesterol medications and lost 20 inches off of her body. And she is an amazing person. She's had a lot of challenges in her life. Her mother was murdered by her stepfather in her bedroom when she was a little girl. She's had a lot of things to overcome. When she was in a body cast for 2 years, the way that people comforted her and made her feel better was to give her candy and food while she was laying there in this cast. So she's had many, many challenges to overcome. But did you see, as she shared her story, how 20 seconds she'd be crying? But now she leaves and she says, you know, I can do that. So is her brain preparing her to solve problems in other areas as she is meeting with success in these goals? It's an amazing thing. How about Goran? He's a member of our church in East Lansing, Michigan. And I don't know, you probably couldn't see it real well on the screen, but he was sweating profusely when he was giving his interview. He usually goes up the climbing wall one time before he goes up to the lifting up the weights room, he calls it. But Dane wanted to get 3 or 4 angles of him going up the wall. So we had him do it 3 or 4 times, and he had never done that before. And so he was literally breathless. But did you see him when he rang that bell, that look of satisfaction? And we can do that too. We can set these goals. We can set, and then as we work with others and exercise with others, we can set that watermark a little higher and challenge ourselves and build that muscle. It's absolutely incredibly important, because that's where energy production takes place, is in muscle. And so we don't want to lose all of our muscle mass as we age. We need to keep working those muscles. And it's pretty phenomenal, the relationship between physical and mental health. We talk a lot about the relation that exists in terms of how we treat our bodies, and it affects the brain, and that's what our exercise segment was all about today. But listen to this. This is from Councils on Health, page 344. It says, the relation that exists between the mind and the body is very intimate. How intimate? It is very intimate. When one is affected, the other sympathizes. The condition of the mind affects the health to a far greater degree than many realize. Many of the diseases from which men suffer are the result of mental depression. The Bible says, a merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit causes osteoporosis. And it is true. Grief, anxiety, discontent, remorse, guilt, distrust, all tend to break down the life forces and invite decay and death. Courage, hope, faith, sympathy, love promote health and prolong life. A contented mind, a cheerful spirit is health to the body and strength to the soul. Listen to this. That which brings sickness of body and mind to nearly all is dissatisfied feelings and discontented repinings. As scientific evidence, of course, confirms this. In the aftermath of a traumatic event, you tend to think more about it, and the more you think about it, the more likely you are to release further stress hormones, and the more likely they are to act to make the memory of the event stronger, and then it affects this entire system of communication between body and brain, immune function, respiratory, GI tract, because the 50 peptides, these are the molecules of communication, which are capable of action at a distance. These molecules exist all throughout the mobile cells of the immune system. They exist in the GI tract. They exist in the respiratory tract as well. And as a matter of fact, not just receptors, but these systems of the body actually make, store, and secrete these peptides. How powerful is this process? How powerful is the mind to make the body sick? Listen to this. This is an absolutely phenomenal statement. I think it's the most phenomenal statement from inspiration that I have ever read regarding a physical process. And it has been validated by science, by the molecular biologist that discovered endorphins and enkephalins, Candace Pert. Listen to this from Volume 3, The Testimonies, page 69. If your mind, she's speaking to a patient, if your mind is impressed and fixed that a bath will injure you, the mental impression is communicated to all the nerves of the body. The nerves control the circulation of the blood. Therefore, the blood is, through the impression of the mind, confined to the blood vessels. So here is a person, a man, sitting in a hot bath, but because he believes this will do him harm, the vessels, held in obedience to what he thinks, are not expanding. They're not dilating. Therefore, the blood is, through the impression of the mind, confined to the blood vessels, and the good effects of the bath are lost. All this is because the blood is prevented by the mind and will from flowing readily. Now, if I didn't have a reference on this, you'd think I was crazy to read something like this. But it is absolutely true. And we know now, how does this occur? Via peptides. They're the molecules of emotion that communicate throughout our bodies and from the body to the brain. The blood is prevented by the mind and will from flowing readily. and from coming to the surface to stimulate, arouse, and promote circulation. For instance, you are impressed that if you bathe, you will become chilly. The brain sends this intelligence to the nerves of the body and the blood vessels, held in obedience to your will, cannot perform their office and cause a reaction after the bath. What do you think of that? What do you think of that? And we don't even give it a thought that our brains and our mental attitudes can actually influence the very mechanisms that are under autonomic control or involuntary control because of the way we are thinking about a thing. This is the most incredible thing about God's plan for restoring us to me, because it involves an entire remaking of our state of mind. It's a brain state. He wants our brain state to be trusting, reposing in Him. He wants our physical habits to bolster, to buttress the mental state that we cultivate through Bible study. And all of these mechanisms interact together. Jeffrey Schwartz, The Mind and the Brain, he's a neuropsychiatrist that uses quantum physics to calculate brain changes, measurable and visibly observable when we just change our pattern of thinking. The time has come for science to confront the implications of the fact that directed willed mental activity can clearly and systematically alter brain function. The power of the will is not valued as it should be, she says. Let the will be kept awake and rightly directed. And what stimulates the will? What empowers and strengthens the will? We read it. Exercise. And it will impart energy to the whole being and will be a wonderful aid in the maintenance of health. It is a power in dealing with disease. Exercised in the right direction, it would control the imagination and be a potent means of resisting and overcoming disease of both mind and body. By the exercise of the will power in placing themselves in right relation to life, patients can do much to cooperate with their physicians. Isn't that just a beautiful thing? Isn't it just beautiful? Because you can have somebody with a really bad personality who exercises and eats right. Have you ever met a mean vegetarian? They're out there. They are real. God wants to do this amazing reconstructive work on mind, body, and spirit, so that we are brought into a robustness. When I think of how my personality was, and probably, there's probably still remnants, you know, of all of that, but when I think of how I was when I came out of bulimia and got the victory over that, and I became a reformer, and I was going to just help, I was like, it was like Mr. and Mrs. Joan of Arc coming to our house. We were like Attila and Mrs. the Hun. And we were so punctilious about everything, but I was sick all the time. I was always sick. And part of it was because my mind still needed healing. My personality still needed healing. My habits were coming into harmony, but even my habits were affected by my poor mind that needed healing. And how wonderful God is to put us in contact with one another so that we can model the wonderful mercy and love of Christ to one another and help one another come into balance. Don't call people that are stricter than you. Don't call them legalists and fanatics. You know, there are people out there. Who are we to judge? Who are we to say what somebody is or isn't? But do people need healing? Do they need their perspectives healed? Their perceptions healed? When we have that kind of gracious attitude, then we're actually putting ourselves in the hands of the Holy Spirit to help people. Like poor Dane and I, who used to make people nervous and they didn't want to come to our house. And so let's just remember that. We don't need to call names. We can just continue to model positive, balanced behavior, and the Lord will bless us as we do so. But it takes time. It takes time for all of us to go through this process. So as we finish today, I don't know if we'll get through this whole PowerPoint, but this is actually another program that is, of course, part of the Living Free program, and it's scripted. And I hope each and every one of you is catching a vision that you should be doing this in your church, your neighborhood, your community. These are very easy materials to present. And you all are thinking of people right now that you wish could hear this information that would be blessed by it. So we're talking today about creating an internal environment. And as we can see, that internal environment has a much more powerful effect on things that we've never thought about, such as immune function, heart disease, osteoporosis, many, many different chronic diseases profoundly affected by mental attitudes, including pain syndromes such as headache, neck pain, low back pain, irritable bowel syndrome, all kinds of GI problems, very profoundly affected, and they may, and mental brain state, mind state may be a stronger causative factor than even some of the other lifestyle issues. Remember, attitude is everything. Attitude, not aptitude, is the key to success. Changing your attitude and thinking changes your brain. Now, we saw that from Spirit of Prophecy just a minute ago in one of the most amazing statements I think I've ever read. And ultimately, your behavior. A bad attitude is like a flat tire. You won't get very far until you change it. And that is true. Let's look at some flat tire attitudes and how they can be rewired into positive attitudes. And there's a whole section in our book that covers this more in depth than the PowerPoint. And at a flat tire attitude, number one is negative thinking. I remember Dane used to sing a song. I don't know if it's an Adventist song. I don't think so, but I certainly had never heard it before, that nobody likes me, everybody hates me, think I'll go eat worms. Have you ever heard that horrid song? He knows it. He knows the whole thing, and if he was up here, he would sing it, and I'd be so embarrassed. It's an awful song, but some people, you stay back there. It's an awful, awful song, but this is the default button of many people. It's a brain state, and they may not even be aware of it on a conscious level. We can say a lot of things with our mouths, but our brain, there's a hum underneath that we're not even recognizing. It's just there. I did a camp meeting one time, and every single time they had the audio on, there was this hum in the background that I could hear, and it was just driving me nuts. And some of us have a hum, whether it's from our past experience, or we may have inherited it, or we've had some traumatic thing happen. We've got this hum going on that's very negative. We're just waiting for something to happen. Failure-based thinking says, I cannot. It's impossible. Things can never change. Everything is against me. Everyone is out to get me. How can we rewire that attitude? We have to focus and pay attention. And focused attention is a really important thing. Remember I told you at the beginning of the week about the psychologists that do studies with focused attention, and when they examine what the gaze is, or where the gaze is of negative people versus positive people on a face that has a cancer on it, then people with a negative mindset will stare at that cancer, and that's the only thing they remember about that face. But a positive-oriented person will notice the entire face. And we tend to look for things in our environment that are going to reinforce what our mindset is. And so negative people with time tend to get more and more and more negative. And this can be almost like a disease that goes on. But paying attention, remember, one of the benefits of exercise is being able to filter out distracting information and the ability to pay attention. And this is a very, very important brain tool. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that begins to slip with dementia. As a matter of fact, we associate dementia with loss of memory, but that's actually one of the last things to go. By the time noticeable memory loss occurs, you've already lost about 23% of brain function through atrophy or cell death. And so a lot of other functions tend to slip before actual memory loss. Things like being able to plan and execute things, being able to pay attention and focus. We had a clinical psychologist that came in. I took a whole day on anxiety seminar, learning all about the mechanics of anxiety. And he is an expert in focused attention, and he did something really interesting. He looked at his watch, and he said, just to show you how excellent the brain is at focusing, at filtering out distracting information and distracting cues, and this is all tied up with learning, he looked at his watch and he said, all right, now my watch doesn't have a second hand, so I'm not going to do this to you anyway, but he said, for the next 15 seconds, I want it to be perfectly quiet in this room and find the itch. And then he just stared at his clock. Where are you itching? And all of a sudden, you start paying attention to all these little spots on your body. that itch. And people just started scratching everywhere. And so, so the ability to filter out information and focus on something really important, that's one of the first steps in maintaining a long-term goal, is focus. TV takes about that, it robs us of that ability through a number of mechanisms. So rewired attitude number, did any of you get an itch when I said that? I bet you did. You won't admit it, but it's true. Rewired attitude number one, positive thinking. Positive thinking says, I can. It's possible. I can experience or initiate some positive change every day. Circumstances will be my helpers. God will put the right people in my path. This is a brain state that we have to practice, and some people need to practice it more seriously and with a will than others. Flat tire attitude number two, this is a big one. I talked to a licensed social worker who runs her own practice, and she said underneath or behind a lot of very serious clinical depression is a bum. It's below the radar, but there's a lot of cherishing and ruminating over negative things, real or imagined, that becomes a very large part of the life. We call it self-pity. This statement is by Elizabeth Elliot, who lost her husband. They were newlyweds. He was a mission pilot. He went to some island to do missionary work, and he was killed as soon as he got off of the airplane. She actually later went back to that same island to minister to those people, the same ones that murdered her new husband. Self-pity, she said, is a death from which there is no resurrection, a sinkhole from which no helping hand can save you. Why? Because you have chosen to be there. And it really does get to be a comfortable place. It's a very negative place. It's a place which will take us into clinical depression if we are not careful. Take time for reflection. Reflection is a good thing. And in our media-crazed society, we take very little time for reflection, don't we? As a matter of fact, we've been sold a media hype that we should never have to suffer any kind of pain, and the cure for any kind of pain is a product, but only if you get it now. And so we have lost the ability to differentiate between genuine sadness and challenges and depression. There is a difference. Sadness is not a bad thing. There will be times of sadness, but resist depression. When a person is clinically depressed, they don't have the brain stuff to solve problems. They don't have the energy to get out of bed. Sadness can actually be a motivator. It takes us offline. We refocus our attention. What happened here? I'm hurting. What are some solutions? You have brain energy to solve your problem. But to think that it's wrong to ever be sad is unrealistic. And this is quite common with people that suffer from addictions. They just don't want to ever feel sad about anything at any time. But in reality, all have griefs and trials, burdens hard to bear, and times of sadness. But these are problem-solving times. These are times where we increase wisdom. As a matter of fact, we've talked about how the brain does generate new nerve cells. Remember that? We had that little discussion. It's phenomenal. There are two specific areas in the brain where these new nerve cells actually migrate. One of them is called the amygdala part of the brain. The amygdala is a fear center, and it's an emotional memory center. When you step on a twig and you jump and scream before your higher processes figure out what it is, it's a kind of a primal center to keep you safe and to just watch for danger. So that is one area where those new nerve cells migrate. The other area is a specific part of the hippocampal area of the brain, which has to do with learning. And so as I look at this evidence from science as a Christian, what picture does this tell me about God? It tells me, and this is my opinion now, this tells me that God has engineered our brains. He has engineered us for healing of traumatic memory and for increased wisdom over time. Wouldn't we expect that of a God who has allowed us to be born into environments and circumstances that are so far beyond our control? We are under sin, we make horrible mistakes, we do things wrong, and we have these scars all over us, but He brings this amazing healing into our lives, and it's very, very real. So how do we rewire that attitude? Self-forgetfulness. What is self-forgetfulness and what is it not? Self-forgetfulness is not neglecting personal, physical, or emotional needs. Remember, when your life is significant, you have self-care. Self-care means you're taking the steps that you need to make sure that you are growing in a positive direction, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. So it's not neglecting physical or emotional needs, but it is keeping them in perspective and finding joy in ministering to the needs of others. I look at the prayer of Jesus, the Lord's Prayer. My prayers sometimes are so xenophobic. They're so selfish and so small. And when I get worried and grief-stricken, and because of my background, that's kind of my default button. It's this real negative and very worrisome and all anxious and everything bad's going to happen. And so when I get that way, my prayers get smaller and smaller. They're all about me or whatever that problem is. But when you look at the Lord's Prayer, He starts, you know, "Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." So, you know, we start with me, myself, and I, then my kids, then my family, then my church, then my community, and we go up from there in our prayers. But God, who has the perfect mind, He is so beautiful. He starts way out here because He is so wonderful. He is love. So He starts way out here with the big picture. And then He breaks it down and it finally gets, give us this day our daily bread. What a great proportion. What a great ratio. That's what Bible study does for us. That's what meditation does for us. That's what doing the right thing, whether we feel like it or not, does for us. It takes us out of the little tiny place that we live and it makes our world bigger. It takes us up out of the dark rainforest, gives us a view of the forest. I love it. And that's what God does for us, and that's what self-forgetfulness does for us as well. My Bible study helps me to be self-forgetful. Ministering to others helps me to be self-forgetful. Not too long ago, I had to do this program on attitude, and somebody said something that was horrible to me, like repeatedly, and I couldn't get out of the room. They weren't meaning to be horrible, but they were horrible. I went and sat in the car, and I started to weep. I called my husband, who I always call, several times a day, if I'm not right with him, you know. He's so smart, and I love to hear what he has to say. We call each other all the time, even though we've been married 30 years. I called him up. I said, "Dane, I'm going home. I'm coming home right now. I don't even know why I'm here. I'm sitting in this parking lot, and I'm so upset. I can't do this program on attitude. I'm leaving. That's all there is to it. I don't know anybody, anything. I'm out of here." He said, "Vicki, you have a job to do." He said, "You need to get in there and do it." I said, "Well, that's not what I called to hear. I didn't call to hear you talk to me that way. That's really rude." He said, no. He said, "You have a job to do. Forget your feelings. You get in there and do it. You know the information is right. You know that it would be wrong for you to leave. Now get in there and do it." It was just horrible. I was so mad at him. But I did it. And it was wonderful. So self-forgetfulness is putting things in perspective. And sometimes women have a harder time doing this than men, I think, because men have this ability to put stuff on the back burner and do other things. And that's really a characteristic of a very healthy brain, to be able to say, okay, this isn't working right now. Let's put it over here and let's work on this other stuff. One time, Dane and I had a terrible challenge. I don't remember what it was, but it was just awful. And I was downstairs just pacing and worrying and pacing and worrying and pacing and worrying. I go upstairs, and he's working. He's editing. I said, "How can you work when there's so much to worry about? What on earth is wrong with you?" And I said, "How are we?" He said, "Well, I have work to do. I can't solve this problem right now." I said, "Well, how are we ever going to figure out a solution if you behave this way?" And he said, "Vicki," he said, "what is your worrying going to do?" Well, actually, he was correct. And who do you think solved the problem? Who do you think got the problem solved? He did. He did. Because when your brain gets into that state, it can't even think. It can't learn. It can't do anything. So that brings us to our next flat tire attitude, excessive worry. I used to call Dane when we were first married. I'd call him on the phone. And I don't know if he remembers this because he's never been here when I've said this. I used to call him at his hotel room because they didn't have cell phones then. We've been married 30 years. I would leave a message and say, "Tell me what's going on at your meeting so I'll know what to worry about." I mean, why describe it as prayer? Why bother? Some of us just get before the throne of grace and we worry before the throne. That is not effectual prayer. Excessive worry increases stress. It actually inhibits learning because your brain is bathed in cortisol, can't learn. It diminishes problem solving. So the thing you're worrying about, you're not going to very effectively deal with. It is rarely accurate, and it prompts inappropriate responses. By the way, every brain has liabilities, whether it's a male or female brain, but there are different ones. Women tend to ruminate. They go over the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Dane calls it mountain climbing over molehills, and they remember everything. This one pastor was married to a woman who would just rack up all the stuff. She would just keep an account of all the stuff this guy was doing, and he said, and then every now and then she'd take out her frequent flyer miles and send me on a trip. And so this ruminating brain tends to develop depression. Now, men will tend to put so much stuff on the back burner and just focus on one thing, pay attention to one thing. They're on the computer all day at work, then they come home, turn on the computer, and they're just like one thing. And it actually causes atrophy. So they get crabby as they age. So can you imagine this scenario? If we don't work on these lifestyle principles, you've got this depressed woman and this crabby man as you age. But we don't have to do that. So excessive worry prompts inappropriate responses. And this is Dr. John Rady from Harvard. If the brain is busy trying to filter uncomfortable and frustrating noise, worries, or other concerns, there's less brain stuff available to even perceive. We've got to control our thoughts. We've got to control our thoughts. We've got to say, no, I'm not, my sins are nailed to the cross. I'm not going to go there anymore. I've already confessed that. It's done. It's over. I'm not going to accept blame that is mine. If I'm guilty, I'll say I'm sorry and we'll go forward. But I'm not going to dwell in the past, which leads to depression. I'm not going to worry about the future because I can't write the script. And that's associated with anxiety. We don't know the outcomes. We can hope and trust. Romans chapter 4 says your job is not to understand. It's to believe. Abraham believed and it was counted to him for righteousness. He's a covenant-keeping God. He keeps his covenant and he will keep his promises. He's a wonderful God. We've got to pay attention to him and not our problem. Rewired attitude number 3 is gratitude. Now our son, Anthony, who you saw there, our whole family tended to be kind of negative for many years, and when we started to try to turn that around and have family worships, Dane and I came out of the world. We were way into the world. Anthony was just a little guy. He was coming downstairs. We said, "So, Anthony, what are you thankful for today?" And he said, "I don't know. I haven't been up long enough yet." But gratitude actually causes very profound changes in the brain and the body, synaptic changes. It lowers stress, hormone production. It increases the ability to learn. It enhances memory. It enhances problem solving. It is usually more accurate. And it prompts appropriate responses. This is from the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. Gratitude, optimism, diligence, and perseverance under stress are linked to better mental and physical health. That's an amazing comment. We wish it said absence of stress, but none of us are promised absence of stress. And tomorrow we're going to have an amazing experience listening to Skip McCarty. He has an amazing interview on perceptions and stress. It's a fantastic interview. And again, it's part of the Living Free program. People that have lived to be more than 100 years old, centenarians, all have one trait in common. It's not diet. It's not even exercise. They are incredibly optimistic people, even humorous about the things that have happened to them. They've been through the Holocaust, suffered traumatic experiences, suffered diseases, family losses of all types, lost spouses, had financial reversals, and yet they had an incredible perspective about what had happened to them. Does God want to build that into his people today? Absolutely. That's his project with you and me. How wonderful. Let's not go kicking and screaming. Let's cooperate with this process and utilize the tools that he has given us for building that resilient brain, which will stave off depression. Ellen White says that our greatest temptation at the end of time is going to be discouragement, and that we'll be especially tested on fatigue, hunger, and delay. Now that tells me that we need to start shaping up these brains of ours and these bodies. Flat tire attitude number 4, catastrophizing. What is catastrophizing? What is it? Huh? Some of you instantly know what catastrophizing is. I instantly know what catastrophizing is. Catastrophizing is dwelling on the worst possible outcome of any situation in which there is a possibility for an unpleasant outcome. I am by nature a catastrophizer. Our dietitian, our nutrition director, Evelyn Kissinger, she is the most sunny, optimistic person I have ever met in my entire life. I'm surprised she doesn't glow in the dark. It's absolutely incredible. I can't even fathom her thinking sometimes. And we are great friends. One time we were holding a series of the Living Free meetings for a group that did not want to, I don't want to say they didn't want to attend. It was mandatory. I had never done that before. I have no desire to talk to people who don't want to hear. You know, go if you don't want to hear the information. It's my philosophy. So I started ruminating about the fact that 100 people were coming who had to be there. And I started to worry about it. And of course, I always get to the meetings first to make sure all the wires are going to work and everything's going to be all right, because I'm just sure something's going to break. And, you know, the world does need those kinds of people, don't they? So I started thinking about how awful this was going to be, and I could just imagine these people glaring at us and trying to get them interested. And so Evelyn comes driving up, and she's got this hair, and she's happy, and the window's open, and blowing her hair. And I went out to her van. I said, "Evelyn, we have a problem." And she said, "What?" And I said, "Do you realize that we are having people here for these meetings who do not want to be here?" And I gave her my most earnest, sober look, because I'd been working on this all day, on this attitude. She looked at me and she said, "Of course they want to be here. They just don't know it yet." And she threw her head back and laughed, and she drove off and left me with all those wires. So how can we throttle up this idea of developing a more optimistic mindset that doesn't catastrophize? Well, there are some practical things that we can do. We need to avoid media, reading materials, and activities that are depressing. Oh, these crime things where they have these bloody pictures and, you know, it's just horrible. The things that people watch for entertainment. Depressing, traumatic, violent, immoral, or pointless. I've had some Adventists come up to me and say, "I only watch educational television. Wheel of Fortune." Wheel of Fortune? You mean that woman that comes out in that gownless evening strap that spins a roulette wheel? This is educational television? Yes, it's educational. Look, we need to start throttling it up a little bit. We need to start reading books that are a little bit too hard for us. We need to be around people that are smarter than we are, and we need to challenge these brains of ours. As a matter of fact, Dane and I just heard about a study the other day. Dane, correct me if I'm wrong, but that those who watch television for a certain period of time each day, their brains begin to look like a drug addict. Is that correct? All right, that's the report that we heard. As a matter of fact, in intake assessment for demented patients, 4 hours a day of television increases risk of dementia. 4 hours a day. And the average TV is on in an American home for 8 hours a day. So how do we rewire that attitude to optimism? Well, it's not by watching that stuff and reading whatever, you know, these novels and stuff. So how can we throttle up optimism? Optimism is making the most of all that comes and the least of all that goes. Don't you like that information, that definition? Don't you like to be around people like that? I really do. I mean, some people just suck the life right out of you. They just suck the energy out of all. Because every time you see them coming, it's going to be something that's wrong. An optimist is a person who believes a housefly is looking for a way out. Don't you like that? An optimist is one who takes a frying pan on a fishing trip. And an optimism is a cheerful frame of mind that enables a tea kettle to sing, though in hot water, up to its nose. I like what Aristotle said. He said, "We are what we repeatedly do." Excellence, then, is not an act, but it is a habit. So how do we rethrottle that attitude? How do we encourage it? Enjoy media and reading materials and activities that are refreshing, relaxing, helpful, moral, and mentally stimulating. There are so many amazing, interesting books out there. There are hobbies that we could get involved in. We have a whole evening where we talk about designer activities for an enriched life. Does anybody here, we're going to close, but does anybody here have any great hobbies? What do you do that's different and hard? What do you, anybody learning master gardening? Does anybody tinker with their car? What do you do? A little
tinkering of the car.
You don't tinker in your car? Well, that's okay. Painting, gardening. Okay, she makes quilts out of old jeans. Anything else? What else do you do? Anybody? Yes. Basket weaving. That's really beautiful. That's fun. Okay, learning home repairs. Wow, I need to take a class from you. She's knitting a sweater. I've done that. That's really great. Any men do anything different here? Yes, sir.
I drive an hour to work each day, so I've got 2 hours on the road, so I take college courses on CD.
He's taking advantage of Automobile University. And you recondition air conditioners. That's wonderful. My husband has a great hobby. He gardens with me. Don't you love it? Don't be negative. I love gardening. I absolutely have a passion for gardening. He digs the holes and spends the money. I plant the flowers. It's a great arrangement. Okay, so how do we do this? We have a whole other section on forgiveness. It's in the book. We don't have time today. Our time is up. We need to recognize those negative thought patterns. It would do us well to sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and write down, what am I telling myself during the day? What script is going on? Replace those negative thoughts with positive ones and refuse to dwell on past mistakes or future fears. Doesn't that sound like a good formula? For it is God that works within you to will and to do His good pleasure. Remember, changing your pattern of thinking changes the brain structure. We have to stop there today. The section on forgiveness is very beautiful, but we're out of time, and let's just bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for this time we can spend together, the amazing tools you've given us to maintain mental, physical, and spiritual health, and moral health, social health, all of these things. We're grateful. Help us to put in practice the things that we learn. In Jesus' name, amen.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.